this morning is Securities and Exchange Commission against McNamee. Mr. McNamee.
Good morning. My name is Raymond McNamee. I'm acting pro se. I apologize for my status, however, I had no choice. It's very clear that the restraining order and preliminary injunction in this case violate the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, Rule 65D, which requires, among other things, that the orders be, quote, specific in terms, shall describe in reasonable detail, and not by reference to the complaint or other document, unquote. In other words, there's a couple of definitions.
And how are arguments of that kind properly before us, given your consent and waiver of any right to complain about the injunction?
Your Honor, I consented to, according to my understanding and my attorneys, who Irving Einhorn, who was with the SEC for 17 years, carefully explained to me that I was agreeing to not participating in any future offerings of 504s until such time that this case had been decided. I have in my possession at that time millions of dollars in holdings of stocks under $5 a share, and I promise you that I or most business people would not under any circumstances consent to that had we understood that that was the case.
Well, you did. You not only consented to the injunction, you waived any right to protest the injunction on appeal. And it does seem to me that that's exactly what you're now attempting to do.
Because the order was not clear, Your Honor. The order did not state specifically what behavior was going to be forbidden under this injunction. It was very vague. In fact, it was so vague that when I went back to the court to motion for modification, and I asked if I could borrow, if I could transfer, what I could do with my shares, Judge Shader said, quote, I don't know, ask the SEC. The SEC drafted the injunction, or judge signed it.
It's entirely understandable that the district judge said he was not going to serve as your lawyer.
But he asked, he said if I wanted to do anything, I should come back and motion the court for that. And when I did that, he said he didn't know what I could do. Public interest is also to be served here, Your Honor. I mean, if things are to be confusing and no one knows what it is they're agreeing to, is that how we are going to enforce things?
The terms used in this injunction are standard terms of securities law. I entirely appreciate that words like offering may be very difficult for lay people to understand. That's one reason why we have law schools. Actually, teaching the concept of offering in securities law takes a good chunk of the basic securities class in law school. But when you put the word offering in an injunction about securities law, there's no ambiguity to anybody who knows securities law.
I was a stockbroker for 20 years, Your Honor, and the NASD defines an offering as a sale of securities by an issuer. I did not participate in any further offerings as far as I understood that to mean.
Actually,
if they had followed 60...
best I can understand it, Mr. McNamee, you were an underwriter, and you should count yourself as extremely lucky you have not been criminally prosecuted under Section 5.
I wanted to ask you on a different... You do control energy findings in Primordial, do you not?
Yes, I do.
Now, are they really separate entities?
In what regard, Your Honor?
Well, I mean, could we consider one to be the alter ego of the other?
Since I control them?
Yeah, because
and
the way you
different jurisdictions?
See, the way you discuss, forgive me, the way you discuss the stock is that it is your personal asset, not the asset of some business entity.
Well,
so I was trying to understand.
All right, I apologize. I own 100%, or I did at the time, own 100% of Pegasus Capital, which was the owner of those three entities, those three LLCs. So when I referred to I, meaning that I had control over those positions. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, thank you.
Well, the SEC's argument, I also agree that this shouldn't have been issued in the first place. They stated in four occasions that I never paid for the stock, yet I don't know if Mr. Pack is aware of it or not, but the Securities and Exchange Commission has canceled checks, subscription agreements prior to any issuances that I paid $30,000 in advance for these shares. For some reason, that was omitted and not submitted to the district court for Judge Shader's review. I don't think I should have been involved in this in the first place, Your Honor.
Did Primordial pay anything to Energy Findings for the stock?
I made an offer to, it was Ocean Optique at the time, I made an offer to Energy Finders through their attorney, David Zanardi, that they could have control of that company, which was a public entity, which would save the company possibly 6 to 9 months to go through a process of becoming public, for $150,000 or 5% ownership in the company. They decided that they would take the 5%. So in essence, expenses paid to the Secretary of State transfer agent and Mark Van Rysselberg, who was not an employee of mine, but a director of that company. So I did have expenses, and in essence, I did pay. There was some consideration for it, whether a check was written directly to the company, as in the case of U.S. Wind Farming, which the SEC says was simply a loan. There was consideration for those shares, yes. And if I may say, just add that the argument was that the $30,000 I gave to the U.S. Wind Farming for the purchase of the shares could be construed as a loan. I don't know. There's corresponding subscription agreements that match up on all of these things right down the line on the $84,000 that I gave the company from start to finish until I walked away from them in August of 2004 when I was convinced that they weren't headed in any direction and I didn't want to participate any further. But to say that it could be construed as a loan would be the same thing as saying I go to the car dealer and I buy a new car, I write a check, and then and in essence all I did is made a loan to the dealership and I didn't buy the car. I don't think that would hold up in front of a jury. And for lack of a better term, since I'm not an attorney, I would say that that argument is almost ridiculous. I don't know what else to tell you. That's all I have.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McNamee. Mr. Pake.
May it please the Court, my name is Christopher Pack, and I represent the Securities and Exchange Commission in this matter.
Can I just start you right out? Because you argued on page 39 of the red brief that, and I'm going to quote, the record showed that McNamee, who controlled the issuer, Energy Finders, and had received stock directly from the issuer for free. You have that in print. Before he sold it, indeed was engaging in activities with the issuer. Now, Mr. McNamee's only dealings with Energy Finders occurred before the injunctions were entered, right?
Yes,
okay.
That's correct.
So what I'm trying to figure out, who is the broker-dealer or issuer that Mr. McNamee dealt with after the injunctions were entered? I mean, is Primordial a broker-dealer or issuer?
The relevant issuer here, in fact, would be Energy Finders. The Commission believes that the entirety of Mr. McNamee's transactions in Energy Finders stock, admittedly through Primordial, constituted one package of conduct, in essence an offering. And there were several stages. First, he got the shares from Energy Finders, transferred them to Primordial, then he turned around and had them sold into the public market. And so part of this course of conduct did indeed take place before the first TRO was issued, and of course before the preliminary injunction. Our view is that Mr. McNamee, when he received...
What took place before?
The transaction between Energy Finders and Primordial, in which shares of Energy Finders were transferred to Primordial.
Okay. Who's the broker-dealer issuer? I'm sorry I'm so simplistic.
The issuer is Energy Finders.
Okay.
And you have a series of transactions, the intent of which is to put Energy Finders shares into the public market. And some of these steps admittedly took place before court orders.
Okay, now wait, hold on, because I need to understand. Is it not true that Mr. McNamee's only dealings with Energy Finders occurred before the injunctions issued?
Well, our view is that there was an entire package of conduct.
No. It seems to me it's sort of a yes or no, isn't it?
Well, no, I really don't believe that it is. It depends on how you define the conduct. We prefer to look at the conduct as an entire package. For instance, if you can imagine a conspiracy where there are several steps in which participants take place, that is properly viewed as one course of conduct rather than a set of discrete sets. What we think happened basically is...
Who's the broker-dealer or issuer that he dealt with after the injunctions were entered?
We would say that his sales, after the injunction entered, were pursuant to a course of conduct with Energy Finders. In essence, there was conduct in connection
with
Energy...
But he is Energy Finders.
Well, Energy Finders is the issuer of the stock. And admittedly, there's sort of a self-dealing aspect to it. But assuming for the sake of clarity that Energy Finders is a separate entity, he took the stock from Energy Finders before the injunction was issued. Then after the injunction was issued, he sold the stock into the public market. When he took the stock from Energy Finders in the first place, the intention all along was to sell it into the public market. And so the first step in this course of conduct occurred before.
That's
and the second step
right.
after. So we would say the second step, which occurred
Look,
after...
forgive me. He's not a broker-dealer or issuer, in my view. He is an underwriter, as my brother has stated.
Actually, he's also an issuer under Section 2A11, although you haven't cited 2A11.
Yeah, I didn't see that. I mean, see, your theory really seems to be that the transfer to Primordial for no consideration was a sham. And therefore, the post-injunction sales were really from Energy Finders, the issuer. Is that your theory?
I don't think we need to go that far, although that's certainly consistent with the facts of the case. Even if there had been valid consideration given for the Energy Finders shares, there still would have been a violation. Because the whole scheme here was to take Energy Finder shares and put them into the public market, and that constitutes an offering. There were two steps. One step occurred before the court orders, namely the transfer to Primordial. The second step occurred after the court orders, namely the sales to the public.
Okay, so is Primordial the alter ego of Energy Finders?
Not necessarily. The statute forbids participation. If you'll bear with me a minute, Section 20G of the Securities Act, 33 Act, defines the term person participating in an offering of penny stock to include, quote, any person engaging in activities with a broker, dealer, or issuer. And so we'd say here, Mr. McNamee is the person engaging in activities with an issuer, namely Energy Finders.
See, McNamee receives the free stock from the issuer before the injunctions are entered.
Correct.
After the injunctions were issued, Mr. McNamee, through Primordial, sells the stock to investors, right?
Yes.
Now, if Primordial isn't a broker-dealer issuer, then for me, because I'm very simplistic, I guess, it's hard to see how he violated an injunction when Primordial sold the stock. I mean, if you're relying on his dealings with Energy Finders... as the act that violated the injunction, that doesn't seem right because those dealings occurred before the injunctions were entered. I mean, well, what you seem to be saying, but you never come right out and say it, is that Energy Finders, Primordial, and Mr. McNamee are all essentially the same entity. In other words, the alter ego of each other, and so each could be considered the issuer.
If I may, that isn't quite our theory. The theory is that when the orders were issued, Mr. McNamee was in the middle of an offering, and he'd taken some steps, but not all of them. And when those orders were issued, he had an obligation to stop, to cease any activities in furtherance of that offering. And the activities he did undertake were in furtherance of the offering that was ongoing at the time the court orders were issued.
Is it your argument that because the injunction prohibits him from directly or indirectly participating in a penny stock offering, that this is arguably an offering indirectly from an issuer?
No, that is an argument that we could make, but the argument we are choosing to make is that, as I said, that there was an ongoing offering. The orders were issued in the middle of the offering. At that point, he had an obligation to stop the offering and not continue it. Instead, he chose to continue it, and that was a violation.
Counsel, I'm interested in a different question about the distinction between criminal and civil contempt. Your argument, as I understand it, is that this was civil contempt because rescission and disgorgement is the ordinary civil remedy under Section 12 of the 33 Act. But the ordinary civil remedy under Section 12 entails giving back all the money and getting back all the securities. Have arrangements been made for Mr. McNamee to get back all of the securities in Energy Finders?
Well, the answer is, at this point, those arrangements have not been made. But we have not received...
Then I don't see how one can say that this is an ordinary civil remedy. Giving back all the money without getting back the securities in exchange is not rescission, it's not disgorgement in an ordinary sense. It looks like an entirely punitive step.
A civil contempt order is intended to restore the status quo ante.
Yeah, to restore the parties to their old positions. And their old positions were that other people had the money and McNamee had the stock. And so far as I can see in this order, there's no effort to restore the stock. And therefore, it's not restoring the parties to their original position.
Well, it is stripping Mr. McNamee of profits that he should not have made in violation of the court's order. And I think that's consistent with a number of the cases involving, for instance, people who've infringed trademarks in violation of a court injunction. And courts have said, well, we're going to take your profits away from you.
Trademarks do not involve an exchange of property for money. Right? Suppose there's an injunction that says, do not sell Blackacre. And in violation of the injunction, the defendant sells Blackacre. Well, the normal rescissionary remedy is the defendant has to give up the money and he gets Blackacre back. I don't understand a remedy under which he gives up the money and the buyer keeps Blackacre. That's not a rescission remedy. It's not a disgorgement remedy. Right? It just doesn't look like anything that civil law recognizes.
What the court was trying to do here was to require Mr. McNamee to give up profits that he had unlawfully earned. And the court determined that his cost was zero, therefore all the money he'd received was a profit.
Suppose Blackacre had been given to the defendant, right? Or he had inherited it at his mother's death. He has a tax basis of zero in Blackacre. Doesn't seem to me it follows that the judge would say, okay, give up all the money and you don't get Blackacre back.
In this area, there may
Mr.
be...
Mr. McNamee may have had a tax basis of zero in these shares, but the shares had value. That was demonstrated by the fact they sold for a positive price.
In this case, there may be difficulties locating all of the purchasers of the shares and retrieving all the shares. And given the fact that it is oftentimes extremely costly...
Difficulties locating the purchasers. Does Energy Finders not have transfer books? It doesn't know who owns its stock?
It would certainly be possible to do it. I'm not saying it's impossible.
I don't understand why it would be difficult.
It could be. It would be expensive. It would cost a lot of money to do it.
But it always does, doesn't it?
Well, the cost of doing so might eat up all the money that Mr. McNamee has been required to disgorge. And certainly, the court order said that the money should be returned to the investors so far as practicable. But let's assume, for the sake of argument, that because of the expense, that it is deemed not practicable. If that were the case, then basically we'd been in a situation where there could be no remedy for Mr. McNamee's violation.
Well, it'd certainly be a remedy. We just call it criminal contempt, and that means you have to file a criminal contempt prosecution. Mr. McNamee could go to jail for an extended period. The activities in this case are functionally the same as those in United States against Wolfson. Wolfson went to prison for 5 years and cost Abe Fortas his seat on the Supreme Court. That's why I said to Mr. McNamee he's very lucky he wasn't prosecuted. Wolfson was prosecuted for this identical conduct,
and his
sentence was quite long.
In this case, the commission had no desire to punish Mr. McNamee, but only to strip him of his profits and restore, insofar as practicable, the status quo ante. And we recognize that there are...
The fact that you have no desire to do it doesn't mean that you can impose a criminal penalty without the forms of criminal contempt.
You know, one problem I fear in this case is that the district court made very few fact findings.
Well, the facts are, for the most part, undisputed, leaving aside the issue of whether payment for the shares was made. Mr. McNamee didn't deny that he sold those shares while the court's orders were in effect. He didn't deny that he obtained the stock directly from the issuer or that he controlled the issuer. And these, of course, were the relevant facts. So since there was really no factual dispute, I don't think that there can be any serious question as to what the district court intended to do or what this court is asked to review. Mm-hmm.
Am I wrong when I think that the real question is whether Mr. McNamee engaged in an offering of the stock when he sold it after the injunctions had been issued?
That issue doesn't strike us as a terribly difficult issue because, as I said, we view all of the steps he took as one package. If you split them up, as Mr. McNamee prefers to do in his, and he says, well, there was no relationship between the transfer from Energy Finance to Primordial and the subsequent sales from Primordial into the public market. There's no relationship whatsoever. Those are two entirely unrelated things. The Commission believes that simply lacks credibility. Obviously, there was the point of transferring the shares from Energy Finance to Primordial was for Primordial to turn around and put them into the public market. Primordial wasn't going to sit there and hold them forever. One can imagine circumstances in which, say, Primordial held the stock for 5 years or 10 years or Primordial was some kind of a mutual fund whose business it was to hold shares as opposed to merely being a shell controlled by one person. And in such a case, maybe it would make sense to split.
But there's been no argument that this qualifies for the Section 4 1.5 exemption?
There's been none.
Of course, Mr. McNamee, I'm sure, has never in his life heard of Section 4 1.5. The lack of counsel here may be important, but there's been no argument along those lines, either by counsel or Mr. McNamee in the district court.
No, and the commission, if the issue had come up, of course, the commission would have taken the position that section doesn't apply.
Okay.
Mr. Pake, I want to ask you a question that has nothing to do with anything. What does special counsel mean?
It means attorney, Your Honor.
But, I mean, just...
Without an attorney who doesn't have management responsibilities.
Okay.
Where you have an assistant or a deputy, such a person usually will have management responsibilities, supervising other attorneys.
Okay, but I mean, you are a full-time employee of the SEC.
Yes.
Yeah,
okay. It's confusing. The lowest rank is attorney, and then senior attorney, and then above senior attorney, you have special attorney, and then you become an assistant, which would imply a lower rank, but in fact implies a higher rank.
I see.
And being a deputy is even better than being an assistant.
Thank you.
So I know that it is counterintuitive.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mr. McNamee, anything further?
Simply for clarification purposes, I'd like the court to understand that I was not the issuer. That when control was...
Actually, you were. Have you ever read Section 2A11?
No, I haven't.
That's the problem. Section 2A11 defines anyone who controls the issuer as the issuer for the purpose of an offering and defining an underwriter.
Your Honor, I controlled Ocean Uptake, turned management over to Energy Finders, whereupon they went ahead and they had their attorney issue the shares. And as far as the shares being rescinded or turned back, the SEC's position was that as long as these shares were under $5 a share, they could not be sold, and when they were beyond that, that was my business. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement. The court will be in recess until tomorrow.